longest running political podcast in the UK. My name is Nick Glynis and I'm a Conservative blogger. Today we're going to have an EU parliamentary election special. I'm joined by, in alphabetical order, Annesley Abercorn, a London MEP candidate for the Conservatives. Hello, Annesley.
Good afternoon.
Also here is Ivana Bartoletti, a London MEP candidate for Labour. Hello,
Ivana. Hi, Labour, good afternoon.
And finally, but certainly not least, is Paul Oakley, who is a London MEP candidate for UKIP. Hello, Paul.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you guys for joining us. So, the sun is here, which means there's an election coming soon. On the 22nd of May, we have the local elections in some areas and the EU parliamentary elections around the whole country. So, the first thing I wanted to start off with was earlier in the week, Ed Miliband set out Labour's position on an EU referendum. Ivana, can you sort of summarise what Labour's position is?
Well, yes, I mean, first of all, thanks for the opportunity to join you today. Well, I think, just to summarise it, I think Ed Miliband was very, very clear about what our position is. First of all, our priority would be about dealing with the cost of living crisis, the NHS, and not getting out of Europe, which seems to be a real danger because of what's happening at the moment. We will reform the EU so the EU can work better for Britain, because I think we can do much better than the way we do it now. And we will introduce a new law to stop powers transferring to Brussels without the British people having a say. And also the law would guarantee that no power can be transferred from Britain to Europe without an in-and-out referendum. So much more clarity and a lot of work to protect the interests of the British people, and of course without losing the most important thing, which is that our membership of the EU is crucial to jobs and of people in Britain.
When you say even though you do believe that we should stay in the EU, but you do recognise that some reform needs to be happen, what sort of reform would you like to see?
Well, first of all, I think it's really important that we invest much more in jobs and growth. I think what we've seen in the past few years has been the outcome of a Europe dominated by Conservative governments. And this, and the response to the crisis is, has really shown that. So Europe really needs to change. So much more investment in jobs and growth, much more investment in innovation, science and technology, much more innovation in investment in providing a younger generation with jobs and opportunity. And let's not forget that Europe is very important because it helps us do what we cannot achieve on our own. So Europe does need reform, and I think the all Labour Party, we all understand how much reform Europe needs at the moment. But without losing sight of the most important thing, which is that our membership is crucial to protect jobs and workers' rights for people in Britain.
Paul, how would you respond to that? Because obviously, from what I can gather, UKIP has a different idea about the EU.
Well, it's a bit of a vague wish list, isn't it? All this stuff about investing more in jobs and technology and all the rest of it. We can do that as a national government. We don't need the EU. And Barroso has made it quite clear to Cameron that there can be no renegotiation of the treaties, so this is all airy-fairy stuff. In addition, we are told that there will be some sort of referendum lock. Well, the trouble is, I think Cameron's already introduced a referendum lock, hasn't he? And we've seen nothing from that. I think Theresa May said some time ago that there would be a referendum if there was any further transfer of powers to Brussels. And of course, we're already seeing the emergence of a European criminal justice system, significant transfer of powers. And where's our referendum? We haven't had one.
But Paul, I mean, obviously you criticised Ivana for saying that the EU sort of makes vague promises in this area, but surely UKIP's promise that leaving the EU will help solve all these issues is just as vague and magical.
Well, it's not really. I'm not saying, and nobody in UKIP is saying that once we've left, it'll be like just flicking a switch and everything will be fine and dandy again. We'll have an awful lot of work to do, not least because we've had so many European laws infesting British law over the past 40 years, and we're going to have to decide which of them we're going to keep, which of them we're going to get rid of, and which of them we're going to amend. So in no way, shape or form are we suggesting this is going to be an easy process, but we are told again and again by various governments that we will have a referendum at some time if necessary, but the time is not right now. And Miliband has said exactly the same thing this week. So the question is, when is a good time? We might as well get it over with now.
Well, I'll bring Annesley in. So David Cameron said 2017 was a good time, didn't he, to answer that question. So what's your position on all of this?
I'm not too worried about the timing as long as it happens. That's the most important thing. I believe that a referendum is overdue, and I want to cast iron guarantee it's going to happen. I believe we've made that a manifesto promise, and in the meantime they want to use the time to see if we can get powers back, which we need to do. There's no point Labour saying we'll have a referendum if further powers go to Brussels, because so many already have, and we need to get powers back. We're in a position where there has to be a fundamental renegotiation of our terms of membership of the European Union. And just to say that we're not going to give you any more powers without a referendum is a fairly flimsy argument, really. So I want to see what the Prime Minister can achieve. I would like to see a lot of our powers come back to a sovereign Westminster Parliament, where I believe most of the decisions affecting our national life should be made. And if we don't get that renegotiation, then that is the time to start having a debate on whether the Conservatives or other like-minded people campaign to leave or campaign to stay in. And I think it should be based on what happens after we try. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm not going to stand here and say we're definitely going to succeed. I hope we do. But my idea of Britain's relationship with the European Union is that of free trade and cooperation on matters of common interest. We are increasingly, over the last, especially over the last 10, 20 years, become part of this project. That means that we no longer seem to have much control over our own affairs. And there seems to be this desire to have a homogeneous, large European superstate, which is what I'm totally opposed to. So we need to have a conversation about this, try and renegotiate, and go for a referendum.
Okay. Well, Ivana, do you want to come back in here? Because Annesley and Paul seem to be painting a lot bleaker picture than you have of what the EU can achieve in Britain.
Well, I think, let me first start on the referendum issue. Now, perhaps maybe you, as you can hear from my accent, I was born in Italy and spent many, many years in European politics. Now, one thing about the referendum that I contest about the point that has been made is Cameron's idea of a referendum is a vague idea, saying we'll have a referendum, and the issue here is that this is really, really damaging for jobs in our country here in Britain, because a lot of businesses all across Europe, you would see that they're asking, will Britain be part of the largest single market in the world in 5 years' time? Now, uncertainty really is the enemy of economic growth, and we ought to be really, really careful to this, and this is what I contest about the position that Cameron has been having over the last few years. Now, of course, I do completely agree that if a significant transfer of powers to Brussels is to be proposed, then I agree the British people should have their say in a referendum. But at this stage, when millions of working people in middle and lower incomes are not feeling the recovery that the Prime Minister is talking about, I think it's a complete mistake to just throw that in the air, and I think it's a very serious risk for our economy. that let's not forget that 3.5 million UK jobs depend on the EU. 50% of our exports are to EU countries. So I don't think this is something that we should give up. Of course, Europe needs reform, but I think we ought to be in the European Parliament. We ought to be leading in the European Parliament to achieve those reforms. And the answer is not just threatening that we're going to leave. The answer is really to lead on reform and change.
Okay. Well, I'll get my put my cards down. I'm actually a floating voter on the in-out issue. I see, essentially, instinctively, I'm a localist, and I think power should be at the lowest level. And I do worry about being part of a bigger institution that wants ever closer union. But then at the same time, I do like the fact that we have a big trading area of the EU, and also, I suppose, being conservative, I'm instinctively wary of any form of change. So, Paul, I mean, what would you say to? I mean, what would you say to what Ivan says? Because a lot of people who say that we should stay within the EU do point to the fact that they believe that it benefits jobs, it benefits our trade. So, what sort of relationship would we have with the EU if we're outside it?
Well, I was interested to hear Ivana come out with the myth again. Well, she's actually increased the number, that 3.5 million jobs, in effect, will go as and when we leave the EU. This is absolute nonsense, and it's based on a study which was carried out by Professor Ian Begg at the LSE back in the year 2000. And he's been quoted in the last couple of weeks saying that... All he was saying in the first place was 3 million jobs were associated with EU demand. That's not the same as saying that they will go as and when we leave the European Union. Now, we are not suggesting for one minute that Britain is going to become a fortress Europe trading with itself and nobody else. We're looking to the world as a whole. And the very idea that the EU, which has always exported more to Britain than we have exported to us, would even consider erecting tariff barriers against us is absurd, and they can't even do that under the WTO. So what I would like, and certain members of the House of Lords in particular, I'm thinking of Lords Tebbit and Pearson and Harris, have over many years been calling on various British governments to undertake a cost-benefit analysis of what we actually gain from our membership of the European Union in pounds, shillings and pence. That hasn't been done. All that we're getting are these continuing scare stories, and it's frankly not good enough.
Okay, well, I want to move the conversation on a bit now. I still stay on the EU, so a lot of this order we talked about can come back. But I'm a political geek, hence why I host a political podcast on a sunny Sunday afternoon. But even though I studied the EU a bit at university, I really don't know what the EU Parliament does. Or what it's for. And I think a lot of other voters are the same. They tend to vote very much on national issues. So, Annesley, I'm going to pick on you. Can you explain to me what the EU Parliament's for?
No, not really. I'm like you, Nick. I mean, I studied politics at university. I did study the European Parliament, and I think one of the biggest things that I probably came away from studying that was that it's just very hard to, it's not very transparent. I think a lot of people, including so-called experts, are not entirely sure how it affects, you know, our day-to-day lives. Well, but of course, what we do know is that hundreds and hundreds of pieces of legislation go through the European Parliament every day. What we do know is that they are not properly scrutinised. What we do know is that a lot of the MEPs don't know what they're voting on. They just simply pass things through depending on what their whips tell them to do. This is very dangerous because we are through the back door getting a lot of regulations that are coming in that are having an effect on British life, and we don't know, you know, we just don't know to what extent it is actually restricting us or constraining us. It's certainly not, I don't think it's a lot of the regulations that come through are for the betterment of our domestic life. I think it hampers and stops us fulfilling our potential, which is why actually in government that in the new government that came in 2010, they were absolutely astounded with the level of regulation from Brussels that was coming through. That meant that some of the reforms that they were elected to do, whether it be in education, social security or whatever, they were not allowed to do. And I think that is why the debate we're having on the European Union now is very different to the one that we were having 5 years ago.
I'll just bring in Ivana there. Yeah. So where is all this legislation coming from, Ivana, that goes through the EU Parliament?
Well, let's first focus on one thing. The debate that we are having on Europe now is different from years ago because the world has changed. I mean, we live in a globalised world. We have emerging powerhouses like China and Brazil. And of course, we live in a completely different world from 10 years ago. So I'm sure that, you know, it's very important that we recognise that that Europe can act as a bloc and help us negotiate with countries all over the world. And we cannot do this on our own. I mean, let's think about the agreement with the US for a minute, for example, the trade agreement for the US. Do you think that we would be able to do something like this as a country on our own instead of a market of 570 million people all across Europe? So the world, we live in a different world now, and we really need to recognise this. The other thing that I think is important to recognise is the fact that Europe has delivered a lot for workers, for example. If I think about maternity rights, if I think about protecting redundancy rights in case of insolvency of the employer. I mean, Europe has delivered on that. This is not to say that Europe doesn't have to be reformed, but I think it's really important to recognise what Europe has done so far. And if I think about last week, if I think about the work that Claude Moraes, who is the Labour MEP for London, has been doing on the inquiry into mass surveillance of the European citizen. This is all work that Europe has been doing over the past few years. And I think we need to recognise that. And of course, there are regulations that go too far, and I completely agree on that. But I think it's really important to remember that in a globalised world where we live, we cannot engage in a race to the bottom. We ought to engage in a race to the top and protect the rights and works and jobs of the people in Britain. And to do so, I think we need to recognise the importance that Europe has had and can have in to help us thrive in the world we live in now.
Ivana, one thing though that strikes me about the EU Parliament itself is, if we are to have such an institution, surely we should have an institution that's more powerful. Of course, that creates bigger problems with sovereignty. But do you think that the EU Parliament itself needs to actually have more power, or do you think it can carry on existing in the current role that it does at the moment, which I don't really understand what it's there for?
Well, I think it's important to recognise that it has to be more transparent. There is an issue of accountability. And the fact that a lot of people don't understand what really Europe is doing at the moment is also because the European Parliament needs to be more transparent, and they agree that it has to change. For example, things like, you know, having two seats, one in Strasbourg and one in Brussels, I think is a complete waste of money. So I think that needs to change. But I think on issues, for example, about air pollution, I think we should recognise the role that Europe has had. And if we can say to Boris Johnson, look, you're not doing enough on this, it's because we've had European legislation measuring this and really pushing for better quality of air in our country. So I think that, for example, I was on the doorstep in Harrow this morning talking to voters, and I think when a lot of people don't understand what Europe is there for, it's because the European Parliament hasn't been accountable enough, hasn't been transparent enough. But I think we all recognise the toll that has had on issues that we as a country cannot deal with. Somebody mentioned the criminal justice system earlier. Now, in a globalised world like ours, where we're living now at the moment, do we really think that we can protect the resources of this country, bring the money back to the country in case of war, if we do not cooperate with countries all around the world.
Ivana, can I bring Paul in here? So, Paul, the argument seems to be there's a we live in a globalised world, there needs to be globalised institutions, and if there needs to be globalised institutions, then the UK should be part of the globalised institution near it. Is that fair enough?
But, well, this is another red herring. Again, it's scare stories saying that we're going to be isolated and have no power if we leave the EU. But if you take the example of Norway, Norway is on various global bodies, fighting its corner as decisions are made on a very wide area of issues, whereas we are stuck in with our EU membership and basically told to do what... told what to do by the European Union. And again, these are all airy-fairy phrases. We live in a globalised world, blah, blah, blah. What does it actually mean in practice? And what reforms is Miliband going to come up with? And this is a question for Annesley as well. I'm still entirely at a loss. It's a genuine question. What on earth does David Cameron hope to achieve through this process of renegotiation? They're saying that they're going to renegotiate. We're already in 2014. These sorts of things take an awful long time. What are we going to be presented with in 2017? The British people are entirely in the dark when it comes to this.
Annesley, do you want to come in on that?
Well, we've been given a flavour of what he wants to achieve. I think a repatriation of a lot of the powers that were given prior, that have been passed over in various treaties post 1993, I think is a starting point. I don't know the details.
But which ones? Which ones?
Well, I think if you look at everything that's happened post Maastricht, I think that is a realistic aspiration to try and repatriate those powers. But you see, look, let me give you my personal view. I would like to see us get to a point where our relationship with the European Union is based on free trade and cooperation. And that is as far as I want to go. I don't see why they have to have any jurisdiction over our other areas of life. And so if we can get to that point, then I would be delighted. I'm not
and somebody mentioned Norway, and then again, I think we have to be very honest with the people that we represent. I mean, Norway is not a member of Europe, but I think we have to be clear that Norway, in order to have access to the European single market, still has to obey to the European rules and contribute to the European budget.
So does every other country in the world. The Americans export to the European Union, the Chinese, the Indians, the Brazilians. Obviously, any country who's exporting to the European Union has to comply with its rules. For example, you wouldn't expect toys to be painted with lead paint, but none of these countries are members of the European Union, and there's no reason for Norway or Britain to be a member of the European Union for these purposes either. It's absurd.
The reality is that Norway pays out of the budget, pays more to the European Union than actually we do. So I think I would be really careful, because in reality, what you're asking for is something, it's a system where you would simply, in Britain, receive the seasons be taken in Brussels. We would just receive them by fax, maybe. We would have to obey to them without even having a say. I think we can do better than this. I think we can be where the decisions are made that have an influence on the life of millions of people in this country and lead the change that you want to see, rather than say that we will just look at what's happening from outside and we couldn't even stop any laws that would be damaging to the UK. This is the situation.
Well, Ivana has come up with one fact now. She said that Norway pays more to the European Union than Britain does. So I'd like to know how much. She's obviously got the facts at her fingertips.
I said that Europe pays, it still contributes to Europe. It's not that Europe, that Norway.
You said they pay more than Britain. How much?
Well, I think in terms of the facts, we can, you know, people who are interested, and I know the thousands of our listeners who are, can Google it afterwards to find out. But I think you both made, what I find interesting about the argument that you two are having, it's sort of like the reverse argument. You're saying you're both of you are asking us to go on faith, which is, and there's no problem in that, because in politics a lot of it is faith. It's difficult to work out, especially with the EU, I think, because a lot of things are entangled into British ways of doing things, such as legislation. So it's very interesting. I have to say, I'm still not completely clear what the EU Parliament is for and what the elections are for, but I would encourage everyone
could I help,
to vote.
Could I help with that?
Yes, yes, go for it.
Yeah, just to add something into this, it naturally doesn't have any powers of initiating legislation itself. It can only amend or reject things that the European Commission puts before it. The additional power that they have is that they can dismiss the entire European Commission, which is not going to be exercised on a regular basis. But one thing that I found particularly disturbing, one of Annesley's colleagues, a very decent chap, Syed Kamal, who's a Conservative MEP, he told me once that one of the real problems is that legislation is voted on so quickly, really in a matter of seconds, and you have the problems with translation, that everybody's sitting there with their headphones on, that by the time you understand what you're voting on, you press the button, having heard the translation, you're actually voting on something else. And this is a very disturbing thing indeed, and I don't know what possible way there is of getting around that.
Well, just to finish off on this subject, because I want to move on to our final subject quickly, the feeling I have is really, if the EU Parliament needs to continue existing, it actually needs to be something more substantial in order to be something worthwhile. And now that poses questions of how it works with sovereign parliaments. But it's, it doesn't seem to be a good way of legislating. Obviously, as Varna's pointed out, MEPs can do good reports and good studies into certain things, such as cyber issues around the whole of the EU. So, and I know Syed Kamal as well. He's a very good representative in London. I respect him greatly. So,
so do I.
But the actual Parliament itself, it's a very, you know, it's almost like a half institution, not fully formed, really. I think they need to go one way or the other. But anyway, that's just my personal view. So I want to move on to my last question, which is going to be a domestic one. We've got the budget coming up this week. So I'm going to ask each of you, if you were the Chancellor, what would be your headlines? I'll start with Annesley again. Annesley?
I think I would like to see more help for those on lower to middle incomes, to lower their tax burden, to have more incentives for councils to freeze or cut council tax to make the cost of living easier. I'd like to see a boost to the pub and hospitality industry by cutting beer tax perhaps further, and giving pubs a helping hand to stay open, because so many so much of that part of our life is under threat. I think something like 18 or 20 pubs are closing every week, and I really would like to see more done in that area, because it's part of our heritage and our national life, and it has become extremely expensive now to do what was once a routine part of our national life, and I think it's definitely preferable to some of the alternatives in terms of binge drinking at home and all the rest of it. So to help with the cost of living and also to keep our pubs open, that would be my main message.
Ivana, if you were standing there on Wednesday, what would you say?
Well, I think the most important thing I would say is that at the moment, where, you know, millions of working people are not feeling that the poverty that the government is saying is really happening. What I'd really like to see is maybe three most important things. First of all is I'd like to see make work pay, for example, expanding free childcare, as Labour is proposing, to 25 hours a week for working parents. I think that's very important and it would be a great boost for the economy. I like to see young people back to work, so introducing the youth job guarantee that the young unemployed have to take, and I would pay for it by a tax on bank bonuses and housing. I think I get 2,000 homes built a year as the Labour government, the Labour Party is proposing.
Paul, what would you do?
Well, to be honest with you, it's all tinkering, because when Labour left office, British debt on and off books was £4.8 trillion. The Tories are reducing the deficit, but as a consequence, they're increasing the debt. Our economy remains fundamentally whole below the waterline. As we're tinkering, a slight difference, which I would be very much in favour of, is to abolish the £1 billion a month that we are spending on foreign aid. We are borrowing that money to give to countries overseas, including Argentina, including India, which now has its own space programme. This is absurd. We've seen what has happened over the last few months with floodplains and the lack of dredging of rivers. I'd rather we kept that money and spent it on something useful in the United Kingdom.
Okay, all right then. Well, we're up to the half an hour point, so I can smell a barbecue happening somewhere actually. So I think that's probably a good time to sort of finish. So thank you all for coming on. It's really interesting to hear all your views. And for the listeners, don't forget to vote on the 22nd of May. Next week, Mark Thompson will be hosting the show. And I'd like to thank Kevin McLeod for the music and Audio View Food for hosting the podcast. Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.